Welcome everyone to our first new era of Smarter Food Safety Tech Talk podcast. I'm Frank Yannis, FDA Deputy Commissioner for Food Policy and Response, and today's topic, tech-enabled traceability, has been a mission for me over the course of 30 years working to advance food safety in both the private sector and now at FDA. Last year, when we issued the blueprint for the new era of Smarter Food Safety, we said that it would be people-focused, FSMA-based, and technology-enabled. For this podcast series, we're going to focus on the tech-enabled side of the equation. We'll explore how digital technologies like artificial intelligence, the Internet of Things, and sensor technologies can help improve business process, enable us to better predict and prevent foodborne challenges, and better detect and respond to problems. Tech-enabled traceability is the first of four core elements laid out in our blueprint. Today, I'm delighted to turn to our co-leads for core element number one, Andy Kennedy and Carrie Irvin, to introduce our guests and guide you through what I know is going to be a very useful and productive discussion. So with that, Andy, take it away.
Thank you, Frank. We'll speak to you again at the end of today's podcast to provide your takeaways from today's discussion. My name is Andy Kennedy. I'm an operations research analyst in FDA's Office of Food Policy and Response, and my focus is on food traceability. Before joining FDA, I led the Institute of Food Technologists Global Food Traceability Center and co-founded FoodLogic, a food traceability platform for restaurant operators, food companies, and retailers. Today's podcast will focus on three things. First, we'll explore the history of tech-enabled traceability. Second, the technologies themselves and how they are being developed and used. And third, the nuts and bolts of how producers and food companies can use these technologies to streamline and strengthen their traceability efforts. Carrie, we've got three amazing guests. How about you tell about yourself and introduce them?
Thanks, Andy. My name is Carrie Irvin. I'm Deputy Director of FDA's Office of Coordinated Outbreak Response and Evaluation in FDA's Center for Food Safety and Applied Nutrition. In CORE, traceback investigations are an important tool for solving foodborne illness outbreaks. Learning about the advances in traceability systems and technologies is important for the work that my staff and I do to continue improving our traceback processes. So today I'm delighted to be joined by Dr. Allison Grantham of the Institute of Food Technologists Global Food Traceability Center, Dr. Hillary Tesmar, Chief Food and Product Safety Officer and SVP Food Safety for FMI, the Food Industry Association, and Angela Fernandez, GS1 US Vice President for Community Engagement. So thank you all so much for joining us today, and as promised, let's start with a brief history on food traceability. So Angela, through your work at GS1 US, you must have seen significant change in the traceability world. Please share your thoughts on that evolution.
Absolutely, Carrie, and thank you. It's a pleasure to join you all today, and I appreciate the opportunity to share how industry continues to work within the community to enhance traceability processes. As you shared, there's certainly been significant progress in the traceability world. And actually, when I began working for GS1 US in 2001, we were just releasing a new barcode for bulk produce. We see this today when you go to get your fruits and vegetables and you put them in the bag yourself at the grocery store, that little tiny barcode on the PLU sticker. But it was really at that time that the industry began to recognize that commodity identification was no longer going to meet the needs of business. And then if you fast forward into 2006, the spinach recall truly hit the produce industry, and it became apparent that we needed to grow our traceability efforts. It was at that time that the Produce Traceability Initiative was born. We had suppliers, wholesalers, retailers, food service establishments, technology partners, and even our partners here, FMI, PMA, and United Fresh joined us as well to discuss how we achieve case-level traceability within our very complex supply chain. Most of the industry has very good internal traceability. The challenge has been, how do we link this externally? We need global standards. They were created by the industry 50 years ago, and that was really what was identified as the essential piece in order to link all of our internal traceability data externally to trading partners. a part of what the initiative was looking to accomplish so that we could share that with each other. Then in 2009, the food service industry had asked for support in leveraging standards to help with their strategies, which also included case-level traceability to support a lot of the food safety processes and visions that they had. And this effort was soon followed by the grocery industry that was aligning and focusing on traceability as one of their key priorities as well. So when you look back over the past 20 years, industry has really moved from commodity identification that we used to do to brand owner identification, which really is kind of that first step. We have to know what we're talking about to get to effective traceability. Then they started working on extending barcodes to cases to be able to include some of that information that we can take action on, the lot, the batch, the serial number, and looking to enable automation for data collection and capture at many different points in the supply chain. And let's not forget the work that the FDA actually commissioned with the Institute of Food Technologists in 2010, where we coined the events with industry on critical tracking events and key data elements, which has driven a lot of the work that we've done recently. And if you kind of zoom out and look at it from a global perspective, traceability has been on the main stage for the last decade as well. New regulations being passed in other countries and technology advances that have supported this global discussion. We continue to work hard to help all industry participants understand their role in helping the food system evolve, as we believe that advancement in traceability systems and technologies for improving traceback processes will need to be leveraged and supported by all of the standards work that we're doing with industry.
Thank you so much, Angela. I really appreciate, especially how you speak to the importance of global standards and making linkages. And I think this is a great transition to you, Hillary, because you have seen both ends of the supply chain through your work with the Egg Safety Center, the National Turkey Federation, and for the past decade working with retailers at FMI. So I'm curious to hear how your perspective on traceability has been shaped by those experiences.
Sure. Thank you so much, Carrie. So it is one supply chain. It's one global network, like Angela mentioned, but where you are in that network really changes the need for information, and it changes your ability to access the information and kind of what you need. So, started my career working in commodities and that really agriculture side of things, and some packaged products, of course. And then now with FMI, with retailers and wholesalers, they're at the end of the supply chain. So the challenge with retail and wholesale is having to capture information for every single type of product that they sell and throughout the complex supply chain, and also the volumes that we're talking about. So, from an egg producer or even a turkey point of view going forward, you can track that product. You can link it back to the farm. You can link it even to the animal, and you can track it going forward to the next step in the supply chain. So then there's multiple steps in the supply chain, and then you get to wholesale and retail having to capture all of that. And I think that's where the how becomes more variable, but the what is what we can focus on. If we have consistent information that's shared, then how we do it can change over time as we advance through either paper-based systems or digital systems that advance as technology advances. So I think that the perspective of where folks are in the supply chain, what information they need access to, how they share it and receive it is the key to kind of think through that from a systems point of view and really simplify everything about that.
Thanks for that, Hillary. And Allison, similar to Hillary, you began your traceability journey literally at ground level and ultimately reaching consumers directly. So if you could, please share your traceability journey with Blue Apron and now with the IFT's Global Food Traceability Center.
Hi, thanks. Yeah. Blue Apron was a unique place to start a traceability journey as a young, fast-growing e-commerce meal kit company. I had the experience of building out both the internal and external traceability capacity, everything from, aligning master data that worked, iterating on inventory and warehouse management systems, implementing supplier management systems, and implementing MRP systems to enable that within the Blue Apron universe and ultimately downstream to the consumers that we ship to directly. We also, the director of their food procurement team implemented all of the supplier facing standards to ensure that we received the information we would need should there be an outbreak that needed to be managed. And now at the Global Food Traceability Center, I have an opportunity to apply some of those learnings and experience with, what hardware works, how the software works, how the data gets collected and transmitted, from everything from onboarding a supplier to what it looks like at the receiving dock to how it moves through a 500,000 square foot fulfillment center and out to a customer, and apply that to broader industry initiatives and challenges. So I've had an opportunity to work with IFT and GS1US and other partners, PMA, United Fresh, on the Leafy Greens pilots, as well as in some seafood sector work with the Global Dialogue on Seafood Traceability. So applying those learnings to, finalizing standards development, creating business-oriented tools to support and enable adoption, like an ROI calculator, helping support industry partners use an IT co-mapping tool to map their supply chains and understand how they could implement the GDST standard, supporting dissemination of code through a GitHub and developer support in a Slack channel, as well as a lot of interesting piloting and beta implementation support. We've worked with over a dozen seafood supply chains on piloting, as well as beta implementation, so live implementation of the standards in three very large supply chains and several others in process. So it's definitely been an exciting journey going from, at Blue Apron, going from, Google Sheet to integrated systems, and then being able to take that from a single company to multiple industry use cases from produce to seafood at GFTC.
Allison, that sounds like an amazing journey, and it sounds like you've seen a lot of different kinds of technology and how they've played a role in traceability. So from your perspective, where do you see the challenges are?
Yeah, so we still see challenges in implementation and lack of interoperability between supply chain partners. Angela alluded to this, and Hillary, I think, both in their comments, where one company to another, are they able to accept and understand the format of data that their supply chain partners are using? Are we consistently communicating information? And so standards come in handy for helping to resolve that, but also having the right hardware to support that data transfer in a way that absolves some of the hesitancy around sharing some sensitive information in places where there could be some incentives against, some business incentives against sharing it. So we see that, for instance, in seafood supply chains sometimes where fishers are open and willing to share data about their catch, and some of the hardware technologies that allow that information to be transmitted directly to processors have been more effective than some that require validation by the traders in between the two folks, the two other nodes in the supply chain. And there's also always the, you know, hardware can sometimes be a help, like in that case, or in other cases, the exact format turns out to be inappropriate. So, for instance, one project, they were using some cards which were not waterproof and didn't work well in a fishery application. When I was at Blue Apron, we struggled a bit with our warehouse management system that relied on QR codes, and the scanners that we were using did not work well in our freezer. So sometimes, you know, the data format can be great, but the hardware itself, when you get into the wet, messy, cold situations that are typical of food supply chains, there can be some kinks.
Understood, Allison. That I can imagine you've seen the good, the bad, and the ugly when it comes to traceability technology through your journey. So, Hillary, you've probably seen from a totally different perspective in the retail industry. You mentioned the volumes of product that are coming through retail supply chains and all the different variety of products that come through. I'm curious, you know, recently, what promising technologies have you seen? What problems are they actually solving? And for the tech providers who are listening, that are interested in approaching the retail food industry, what should they know before they come talk to you about their solution to all these challenges?
Great question, Andy. So from the perspective of retail and wholesale at the end of the supply chain, we have been focused on the data that is captured. So and there's, I'll put them in two big buckets. Obviously, we can, you know, tease it down even further, but data that's collected by the company and then data that's shared with trading partners and partners in the supply chain. So technology should make things easier and should allow us to keep and share the data that we need, but it's a tool in order to do that. So the keyword that I'm going to use or the buzzword that I'm going to use is interoperable. We really need interoperable systems because we are accepting product from so many different places and supply chains and commodities. Really, we do take in everything at a distribution center and at the store level. So the interoperability has to be there. You know, in the past, I'll say 10 to 20 years, the industry has really shifted from paper-based records to digital or electronic records. I see the electronic records advancing and morphing even more, I'll say evolving even more, because, you know, look at 10 years ago with technology, you know, we're light years beyond that now, what's another 5 or 10 years going to do? So we need to be able to be flexible and to adapt to those changes while keeping the information as simple and as consistent as possible. And that's why those standards with GS1 US are so important. The frameworks and architecture systems that IFT Global Food Traceability Center has been working on in the past, you know, almost 10 years now. So we all have to work together because we can't solve it alone, but we all have to really focus on the information itself and then be flexible to change as technology changes.
Interoperability is key, Hillary. I totally agree. And that transition from paper to digital, it's so important to have those standards so that you can share information, because it makes no sense to digitize it if you can't share it across the supply chain. So Angela, you know, how does your organization help with this? How do you connect to the traceability technology world, and what technologies do you see on the horizon?
Yeah, it's a great question, Andy. And I have to say, I absolutely agree with Allison and Hillary. I mean, technology is scaling at a rate that's faster than ever before. I think they're saying 3 years is now our new 10. So from a GS1 US perspective, we work closely with a number of technology providers. I mean, they're critical, right? Because they're the ones that make the standards come to life and enable the implementations to be applied to the real-world use cases that industry is looking for. So I would say technologies that we used to see out on the horizon in many ways are kind of already here, right? So if you think around blockchain, right? Blockchain was very big a couple of years ago. We were hearing a lot about it from our innovation team as well as our industry members, everyone trying to figure out what it was. Was it really going to solve everything we were looking for? And we were able to kind of bring the industry together and determine, you know, what use cases it was good for, what learnings that we had to share, be able to look at different pilot opportunities, because our goal was really around interoperability, right? As Hillary and Allison highlighted, we want to make sure that as technology continues to advance, the standards are in place and can be leveraged or extended, so we're not reinventing the wheel, right? I think Hillary said we want to be able to continue to progress in our technology capabilities, and the only way to do that is to have some of that standardized so we do know what we're saying to each other and do have the foundation piece standard within our systems. So we actually today are still working with the industry, I think, on our second phase of interoperability when it comes to distributed ledger platforms that are being offered by some large technology providers today. So we're very hopeful that that we're starting to make additional progress on the interoperability piece by leveraging the standards that we are putting in our systems so that we can make sure that we do have solution choice for the whole industry and that it truly is scalable. So it can be, the benefits can be recognized by all of us, right? And I think another thing that I would share is that from a U.S. standards perspective with our GS1 community, our board actually last spring announced a sunrise date of 2027 for 2D barcodes at point of sale. This is a direct outcome of the demands on our businesses as well as what our consumers are expecting to have at their fingertips these days when they're purchasing goods. So our team is working with industry to understand what that trajectory is going to look like while also still tracking and investigating the early technologies, I would say, that are being implemented by the innovators and the first movers when you look at artificial intelligence, Internet of Things, machine learning, and even robotics. And I'd say many of us are still kind of buzzing about a technology where microscopic identifiers can be placed on an item like lettuce. So it's making identification persistent well beyond the product's purchase, even after consumption. So we could actually have our identifiers and eat them too. But I think our goal is to really make sure that as we advance our capabilities, we're making sure that we're continuing to work effectively with our trading partners to meet their needs and also delivering to the end consumer.
Thanks, Angela. And I think something that you said there is really important, and that's this idea of technology being scalable. We know the food industry is made up of so many different players that are different sizes. They have a different scope. They ship different volumes. And for some entities, technology can be a really overwhelming, especially technology-enabled traceability, can be a really overwhelming topic. So with that, if a food or technology company wants to learn more about tech-enabled traceability, what resources do you provide, and do you have to be a technology expert to use them? Also, are these resources suitable for small or mid-sized companies or only large firms?
Yeah, it's definitely something that we get asked quite a bit as well. Understanding the technology capabilities and offerings that are out there, as well as, you know, the standards themselves are difficult too. So as a neutral, not-for-profit organization, we can't recommend any one, but we do have resources available where we make it easy for folks to truly understand what options are available and how best to select them, irrespective of whether you're a major brand or retailer or a small supplier. So for our membership in the U.S., as you might imagine, over 80% of our members are actually what we refer to as a micro business. So their annual revenue is less than $1 million. So we have live and on-demand education and training that we offer. We have tools that are online to support members so they don't have to be that standards expert or know what technology questions to ask. We've even got RFP templates for customers to use, and we even have like a repository of technology providers depending on what's needed. So it narrows down the scope a little bit of how they go and look for these. But I would say most importantly for us, is our community, right? We've got a whole group of people at different size companies, different levels of traceability capabilities. So they share case studies with us. They're in work groups, but just understanding what others are doing and learning from them is a tremendous benefit that we offer as well.
Thanks for that, Angela. And Hillary, I think you're also in a similar position where, you know, the retail food industry has a lot of, you know, sizes, shapes, varieties, and given your broad experience in the food industry, what advice would you give to food producers as they contemplate next steps in their traceability journey? And what resources would you point them to either at FMI or elsewhere?
Yeah, thank you, Carrie. There's a lot of information that they can keep and share. So it's all about the data. It's about what information is being maintained and what information is being shared. We encourage our members to optimize information in existing systems. So if they can, I know for this audience it's probably hard to believe that investing in food safety sometimes is a challenge, but it is. But investing in other systems where the ROI might be a little quicker is something we've been talking to our members about and encouraging them. So for example, if they can access the same kind of information but link it to the payment systems or inventory management and control systems, even shipping records, if they have the information somewhere else that's in a portal or a format that is accessible to them and shareable with others, then let's capitalize on that and kind of, you know, make it applicable for food safety also. So we've been able to make a little bit more progress in that way. I mean, being flexible is just so important. I don't think there's much difference between the size of the companies. All companies are having the same opportunities and challenges. The audience question to me really is about role within the company. So we see different folks within different departments approach the topic of traceability very differently. So food safety is obviously one, you know, key audience for traceability discussions. There's also IT and procurement and supply chain and logistics. And wherever those folks are and what their background and expertise is, they're going to just approach it a little differently. So I always think that the resources kind of need to be specific to who the audience is and who you're talking to and what their needs are. So that's the way that we approach it. We use resources wherever we can get them. We've been involved with the Global Food Traceability Center since its inception. That is a great resource. GS1 US has also been an incredible resource on traceability because they've shared things such as case studies and, you know, implementation plans. So it makes it real for our members. So hopefully that sums it up, but I think, you know, being flexible and then tailoring the information to an audience really is critical and kind of understanding the different needs and perspectives of the folks that you're talking to.
Yeah, thanks for that, Hillary. And I think you make a really exceptional point about, you know, traceability in the food safety realm is really about pulling from existing resources, you know, within a company that maybe fall outside of your food safety group and educating them on how, you know, traceability is food safety and how they have a role in this. I think that's a really excellent point. Allison, speaking of bringing people into, you know, awareness about food traceability and how it impacts food safety, the Global Food Traceability Center is in a unique position to, you know, provide resources and education to communities of people that maybe have a background in food safety but not traceability or vice versa. So please share with us the unique ways that the Global Food Traceability Center works with the traceability technology community and what you would recommend for developers who are new to the space or who aren't necessarily technology experts.
Yeah, so I think one of the foundational things that GFTC offers is a really solid basis in core traceability concepts and helping folks who are maybe developers or coming at it from a different angle understand, okay, what is unique identification? How do you achieve unique identification? What does that look like? What are critical tracking events and key data elements that are, the core structural underlying traceability systems? And then offering resources and publications that would help members of the tech community or developers familiarize themselves with sector-specific CTE, KDE matrices, so understanding what, how these concepts apply to various supply chains. What does it look like for a produce supply chain? What does it look like for a dairy supply chain? What does it look like in various proteins or grocery products? So I think those types of instructional pieces are really helpful to the community. Beyond the sort of seafood-specific tools that I referenced earlier with the IT co-mapping tool and the GitHub with relevant code snippets, and then the Slack channel for like real-time live dialogue among developers to troubleshoot. Okay, we're trying to implement this GDST standard for a client, and what do we need to do for them? Where is it going wrong? So those are some of those live resources for that end of the spectrum. But we also find ourselves talking with other stakeholders in companies, folks who are maybe members of the supply chain team who are trying to make a pitch for a new system or adopting GDST to their executive teams. And for them, it's about understanding where how their current potentially gaps in traceability are costing them and what type of categories they could expect to capture cost savings through implementing a higher level of traceability system. So, are they still taking photographs of BOLs and attaching them into their system and then someone's manually transcribing the information in the picture into an actual database? Like, these are things that still happen. And so understanding, okay, where are you now and what type of information management savings could you expect to experience if you scan something and that information was entered automatically? Or product management. Do you not have visibility to freshness information that if you had more uniform entry of that and more uniform supply of that information from your suppliers, you could potentially improve your shrink rate and reduce product loss? And what could those cost savings look like? So we have a calculator for that that helps businesses understand a little bit more of, what the business case is too. So I guess I would recommend those types of resources for all, the different stakeholders in this community who are looking to understand how do I do this and why do I do this? All of those things help, along with, the standard case study type of documents and pilots that Hillary mentioned as well.
Well, thank you, Allison, Hillary, and Angela. That's a tremendous list of resources that I'm sure folks listening are looking forward to checking out. We've received some questions in response to our outreach about this podcast, so we have time for two or three. So if you don't mind hanging around for a little bit more, we've got a few questions here. So the first one, I think probably Angela's best able to answer this one. With most food and drug products already using a barcode, and the upcoming GS1 digital link barcode standards allowing for individual product traceability, would you say that traceability solutions are already out there?
Thank you, Andy. Absolutely. Traceability solutions are out there, and they're effective, and they're helping companies track and trace. I think Allison mentioned earlier the Leafy Green traceability pilots, right? That was an effort that the six associations, three of us obviously were involved, did late last year. And, you know, industry was able to source back to the original product that was in question. I think the thing that we still have to solve for was also talked about, right, which is not all of them are interoperable. So we still have gaps that we need to be able to address, but we need to work together so that we can improve the speed and efficiency of traceability, and it can be accomplished through greater automation, right, less manual data entry, and more consistent identification across what it is that we're talking about and where we need to be noting that when we're looking at critical tracking events and key data elements. The other piece was around digital link, which actually it's a new standard, GS1 digital link. We announced it last year, but it's a new standard that is delivered in a 2D barcode that helps the barcode become web-enabled so that you can deliver dynamic information through just one single smartphone scan. So it could deliver, as an example, traceability information to a store associate, or the consumer could be looking at it, and it could keep them informed around product expiration. It could also let you know if it's been recalled or any other claim that they may be interested in. But again, I think it all goes back to how do we continue to work on the foundation to make sure we all have that data set that we can use inside of our organization and others are able to understand, and then the technology would be able to help support us as well.
Allison, I think this one is right up your alley. So how will farmers and others in the food industry in other countries be informed and educated about traceability technologies?
Yeah, so there's a variety of ways that can happen, and partnerships that IFT and the Global Food Traceability Center engage with to bring those first mile actors in, so to speak, because traceability is only as good as your primary data, and so it's very important to bring those primary actors in the supply chain into the fold. So the way that typically happens is through actual pilot projects. So we just wrapped one up last week with fishers, tuna fishers in the Philippines, where we've been looking at an app for capturing data, as well as some other approaches that I mentioned earlier, that transponder NFC card, which is, moving toward an NFC keychain tag, which is, not going to get obliterated by the ice that they dump on the tunas. As alternative for capturing that first mile data and transmitting it to the processors. So, IFT and the Global Food Traceability Center and, our GDST partners come in with what data needs to be captured at that stage in the supply chain, and having that really clearly enumerated in the standard. And then, we explore different ways that those actors in the first mile could capture that data and share it with supply chain partners and see, okay, this one, you're going to need some better power options because people fish for tuna at night, and so a solar panel is not going to cut it for the transponder. We're going to need some better batteries. or this app works for fishers, but the traders are, resistant to using it because of, various business incentive issues. So I think that it works best when you're doing on the ground live projects to understand what the physical environment looks like, and helping to translate those standards into accessible tools for first mile actors.
Hillary, I'm sure you've received this question before. What incentive is there to be an early adopter when other traceability technologies could emerge in the next few years that are more cost-effective and easier to implement?
Thanks, Sandy. I love this question because it gets at the positives. It gets at, you know, why we're doing things and doing them for the right reasons and, you know, what positive benefit is in there. You know, the FDA mentioned incentives in the New Era Blueprint. I think, you know, all of us are kind of curious of what that's going to be, but I think there are some inherent incentives that are part of being an early adopter. And I think that early adopters now will be early adopters in the future. But the best benefit that I can think of now is in risk management. Traceability can help you have data points that are critical to your risk management system, and how you use that information can be really robust for a company. So just by having a robust traceability program, your risk is going to be lower because you know where your product is, you know where it is in the supply chain, you know how much is out there, and you know what's out there. So that inherently is going to help you manage your overall risk, and the people and companies who deal with that will see the benefits immediately. The other part is companies who innovate naturally do better because they understand what's important to them, either to be more efficient and also to their customer base. They're going to know, you know, how can I use this to share this information with stakeholders and customers and business, you know, trading partners in the supply chain. So I think there's a lot here that we can dive into and figure out, but I think seeing some case studies about the ROI for investing in traceability, I think is a great way to start moving forward and start encouraging companies to invest in traceability for the right reasons.
Thank you for that, Hillary. And Angela, Hillary, and Allison, thank you so much for these really great and helpful insights. I did want to go ahead and turn it back over to Deputy Commissioner Frank Yannis and ask him for his take on our discussion today. Frank?
Thank you, Carrie, and you're absolutely right. Our guests have showed some really impressive insights. I've been here listening and taking notes with the challenge of what are my takeaways, because there's so many. So let me summarize and tell you four things I thought I heard real clearly. Number one is, tech-enabled traceability is an idea whose time has come. From the conversation today, you've convinced me it's inevitable. We're on this journey. And you also heard that we've been on this journey for a while. People have been doing traceability on paper for at least a decade. But there are accelerants today that are going to allow it to scale. And those were data standards, whether they're industry harmonized consensus standards such as GS1, or the types of critical tracking events or key data elements proposed in FDA's food traceability rules. But data standards will allow the food system to speak a universal language of food traceability that will help with its scaling. And number two, the role of new and emerging technologies in connecting the dots so that every single participant in the food system or node only has to do their part, and we let technology do the rest. And so, as we heard our panelists, I was envisioning that we will see the day when it looks like something equivalent to FedEx tracking our food. So that's really exciting and encouraging. My second takeaway was that for tech-enabled traceability to scale, interoperability is key. I think the listeners heard that loud and clear. I'll emphasize, interoperability is key. As we've moved from paper to digital, we believe that digital will make traceability easier. And having worked for very large organizations myself in the past, I know what's complex doesn't get done. What's easy to do happens, and it scales. And so technology will play a role. But it's unlikely for us to see a single technology provider adopt and convince everybody to use their platform. Why is that? The food system is a very large, decentralized food system. We know it has small, mid-sized, and large producers all over the country and all over the planet. And so there won't be a one traceability solution fits all. And so that's why interoperability will be key. And as long as we really structure it around data standards, we can remain technology agnostic and allow different technology platforms to interoperate. And we all need to insist on that. Everybody that's participating in the food system must insist that food traceability has to be interoperable. Now, the third thing I heard is that there's a strong business and public health case, both business and public health case, for better food traceability. Now, I heard from some of the panelists that you ought to involve other stakeholders in your organization. If you're listening in and you work in food safety department, you ought to engage buyers and logistics and maybe your marketers, because food traceability is good for people and it's good for business. The benefits are clear. We believe that there are food safety benefits, such as responding to an outbreak or a recall, but we also heard suggestions that better food traceability is the equivalent of better transparency, and it provides more visibility in the food system, and that could lead to supply chain efficiencies and freshness and reduced waste. We all know that every day that you remove from food distribution for fresh products, that's a day of shelf life you give to the customer in terms of freshness. We know that if you eliminate the anonymity by better food traceability or transparency, you could reduce incidents associated with food fraud or food authenticity. And ultimately, I think we all know that food traceability and transparency is about consumer trust. And then the last one that I heard right here at the close is another good one, which is better tech-enabled food traceability can't wait. Again, better tech-enabled food traceability can't wait. And I heard suggestions that you ought to get started now, do a pilot, get out there in the field and see how things are really working, learn from testing and piloting, and continue to scale. The benefits are there, as you've heard it. Early adopters will be winners, as you heard stated. And I think, if anything, we've just lived through the largest test on the U.S. food system in over 100 years, the COVID pandemic. While the virus wasn't transmitted by food, we saw that those supply chains that were more digital and connected tended to be more nimble and resilient food systems. So again, better tech-enabled food traceability can't wait. And so with that, I'd like to bring our first Tech Talk to a close. I want to thank our co-hosts, Andy and Kerry. Fabulous job. I want to thank each of our participants. They were brilliant. And lastly, please visit our Tech Talk podcast page on FDA.gov for updates on our next installment. Together, we can create a safer, more digital, and traceable food system. Until next time, thanks for listening.